Thanks for tuning in to the Medevac Podcast, powered by the Robert Irvine Foundation, whose mission is to support and strengthen the physical and mental well-being of our nation's heroes and their families. I'm one of your hosts, David Reed.
And I'm your other host, Christian Myers. Thank you very much for joining us today on the Medevac Podcast. If you're new here, there's a price for the show. You have to share it with a friend or family member if you get something out of today's episode. We've got a pretty interesting guest today, and I think you're going to get something out of this episode. Our guest is Trace Johannesson. He is a former Marine. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah. Unless you're Jack Mandeville, you got to say ex-Marine, right?
Ex-Marine. He's the only one, I guess.
Yeah. He's the only one that can get away with that. That's for sure.
Trace is a former 0311 infantry Marine, and now he is the mayor of Rockwall, Texas.
Turns out, yeah.
I think there was a couple of things that happened in between then.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
More than a few of those.
From Cherry Marine to mayor.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
A long journey.
Welcome to the show.
Man, thanks for having us. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on and sharing your story. It'll be a unique one. I'm excited.
Yeah. I was like, Medevac podcast. I was like, you know, I'm not sure I'm qualified, you know?
Yeah. And that's a common question we get all the time too. As a matter of fact, Robert Irvine himself was like, yeah, well, we can't just, you know, have just these stories of, you know, getting picked up by a helicopter. And that's not the premise. We talked about it before the show is really just to provide a hand up and a story to share to others so that they could overcome whatever obstacles they're facing in their life as well. So
yeah,
I'm sure that you'll have a couple stories, a couple life lessons.
No doubt.
That we could all resonate with. So let's rewind it back to the beginning and start with how you got involved with the military and started. Is it family? Was it college? Was it getting out of jail?
Everything but the last one, thankfully.
Yeah.
A lot of family, right? So I was getting out of high school in the mid-90s. All my grandparents, except my mother's mother, served in the military. So my dad's side of the family.
Wow.
My grandfathers, both of them. I'm actually a fourth generation Marine, if you can believe that.
Wow.
And I think I'm the second or third to fail out of college and go to the Marine Corps, go overseas and come back to college.
He's definitely not so, the first Marine apparently it's to say that, though.
Apparently, it's a family tradition.
Okay.
So I went to, I grew up in Carolina and then moved to Texas in Denton County, north of Dallas. And I went to Texas A&M University, which means I'm not that smart. The old Cal College, as we call it. And agricultural, mechanical. And I think on paper, my degree was mechanical engineering, but in reality, I majored in the Corps of Cadets and drinking beer. And it turned out I was really good at both of those things. And so after about 3 years, they're like, you're out of here. Like I'd already changed majors. I've already tried like everything I can. And it's funny because a state school in the 90s, as long as the check clears, they'll let you stick around for a long time.
Okay.
And so I did. And then finally they're like, you're out of here. So, you know, I'm 21 and I'm a college dropout. So I'm super proud of myself. I'm really proud of the investment my parents made. And so I came home to live with my folks and I worked construction since I was 14. So I started working construction and I led a crew and I was, you know, making good money. And then I moved out and had a bachelor pad. And after about 2 or 3 years of that, I knew I wasn't ready to go back to college. I had the wherewithal to know that I wasn't going back to school right away. Mm-hmm. But I also knew this job was kind of a job. I was kind of marking time. I was looking around doing things like the police department. My dad was a federal agent for 30 years after the Marine Corps. And so I was flirting with that idea. As it turns out, you can't be a city employee and get insured to drive city vehicles like police cars, or as I was told by Plano PD, dog catcher trucks, if you have more than 3 speeding tickets in the last 3 years. And I had a lot more than that. So this is 2001 timeframe. Mm-hmm. And given that I come from a long line of Marines on one side and Army Air Corps on the other side, I was looking at the Marine Corps reserves, like, so, you know, weekend warrior kind of stuff, select Marine Corps reserve. I'd already talked to the recruiter in 2001.
What month in 2001? I think that's very important.
I was probably June or July, August timeframe of 2001.
So just right before the big hit.
Yeah. And I'm a crew leader and I'm making good money, you know, in 2001.
Sure.
I live in a bachelor pad. I've got a 401k, my own truck, and it's a lot of fun with hanging out with these dudes on the weekend.
Oh yeah.
And then something happened on 9/11 2001, and I was like, oh. And so while I had been talking about going to reserve duty, I called my dad. I was like, you know, I don't think I can just sit here on the sidelines. I think I need to go.
Yeah.
And he's like, you do whatever you want, son. Like, you know, I'm proud of you, whatever. So I actually walked in and signed the papers on September 18th, 2001.
Wow.
So I walked in the recruiter's office and I think I was a recruiter's dream. I did have to get one waiver though for the Marine Corps. Mm. My parents have been married to each other for 52 years and they had to get a waiver for that in the Marine Corps, but we got past that, you know.
I'm sorry. You had to get a waiver for what?
For not being a bastard child.
Oh.
Yeah, my parents are actually married to each other.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
That went right over my head.
Yeah.
It all comes back to the, you know, had a good upbringing.
You can get a waiver for anything.
Yeah.
So I walked in and signed up. They're like, oh, great. You know, you want to join the Marine Corps. You know, tell me about what's important to you. I was like, let me stop you right there, Hoss. Like, I'm about to be 24 years old. I've already had a job and I live on my own and I come from a long line of Marines. I was like, I'm already sold on the Marine Corps. You can save the pitch. I just need you, recruiter, Sergeant Kirkendall, to just do all the paper stuff. He's like, well, okay, well, you ever been arrested? I was like, not that we know of. You ever been to jail? I'm like, no. He's like, you do drugs? I'm like, no. You got any kids? I'm like, nope. Your girlfriend pregnant? I'm like, nope. He's like, he was waiting for the catch, right?
Because
I want to sign up. And then I took the ASVAB and I did pretty well on that. They're like, okay, you can do whatever you want. I was like, cool. How about infantry, 0311? They're like, but you can do whatever you want. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I'm not doing that. I'm going to be in the infantry. Like, and they're like, they were so disappointed in me.
Which is surprising, actually, like whilst talking to recruiters that are usually trying to fill those shoes pretty quickly.
Maybe not at the time. I don't know. I was 7 days after 9/11. I'm sure you had to wait in the line to talk to them.
Believe it or not, they were like, I didn't ship until December, which is crazy.
Because there
were not that many boat spaces, I guess they called it.
Yeah.
And so, I didn't ship till December. So December 17th, I'm showing up the eve of my 24th birthday. I set foot in MCRD Marine Corps Recruit Depot, San Diego. So, for anybody who's not a Marine, like that's the West Coast Marine Corps. And my dad went to Parris Island, South Carolina, East Coast Marines. Mm-hmm. And so he likes to bust my chops. He's like, so you're a Hollywood Marine. They give you like Oakley's and boot camp or whatever. Like, yeah,
so it begins.
Yeah, exactly. So it was 2001. So, you know, I spent my 24th birthday, the first night, you know, staying up all night long and had Christmas and New Year's and boot camp, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And did you really?
Oh, my
gosh.
Yeah, I left 2 days before Thanksgiving.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's.
for basic?
Yeah, basic training.
I was in Ranger Selection for Christmas one year.
Is that RASP? Is that what they call that?
Yeah.
Yeah?
And that was awful.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
Santa brought you push-ups.
So you find yourself, you know, going through basic training basic training and boot camp, as you will. Sorry, that's the Army showing in my...
Yeah, we still say boot camp, right? It's recruit training or whatever you want to call it officially. Marine Corps still says, we say boot camp.
Yeah.
You know.
Basically all the same.
Yeah. So how did that unfold for you? So obviously... You made it.
Yeah, I made it. Yeah, here we are. When I said I want to be 0311, the recruiter's like, well, have I got a deal for you? Used car salesman that they are. He's like, you can still be a grunt. Your primary MOS is infantry. But we got this other thing called security forces, these fast companies, and they do cool stuff like fast roping.
Yeah.
And they have the most amazing, you know, deployments. It's really cool. I'm like, oh, that sounds cool. It's like, you're like a super grunt.
Nice.
Lies. I did not go to a fast company. I was in a special weapons depot, which I won't really go into, but I was a glorified security guard for the first 2 years of my enlistment. So a little bent out of shape. That being said, I was stationed in Western Washington, a little town called Silverdale, which is on the Kitsap Peninsula from, you know, 02 to 04. We made the best of it. I used to joke I'd come home from Seattle where it does rain a lot. It's like a drizzle. Yeah, and my friend's constantly. Like, man, you're really pale. You've been in prison? I was like, no, I've been in Seattle.
I was stationed at JBLM as well. And
were you?
Yeah. And it was the temperament there is very different than any other place. Yeah. Bunch of pale people. And they don't like a bunch of pale people. I've been in. Pale people. And then I'm like how to communicate effectively with people.
I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah.
Dave, I went up there, you know, a dude from the South. I was born in Carolina and, you know, raised in Texas. And I would open the door for ladies in Seattle, and I'm using the term ladies loosely, and they would get mad at me. And I was like, oh, you don't call me ma'am. Don't open the door. I can do it myself. And I'm like, whoa, like my grandmother's gonna reach down from heaven and smack me on the back of the head.
Yeah.
And she was a supply officer in World War II, by the way, in the Navy. So like, you know.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
But I was just like, I don't understand.
Yeah, there was a phase of that too. It was like, I get the door myself.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I'm sorry.
And it's like, I'll let it slam in your face next time. Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's just
common human decency is just get the door for anyone if you're going.
Typically, yeah.
I don't know.
One would think, unless you're easily offended, in which case there's nothing you can do that's right.
But everybody's so offended now. Yeah. Anyway, well, you know, a different topic for a different day.
Well, you know, we
talk about that one.
A lot of us commiserated, like we do in, you know, military units. You get in the military and like it's not what you thought it was, but at least you got your dudes there, your guys. And so we made the most of it. We were up in Western Washington. I was a Boy Scout growing up, so I liked the outdoors.
Okay.
And so I would tell guys, and I was older, I'm a grand old man. Like, you know, here I'm 24, 25 years old as a PFC. And I was like, you know, we should go like on a little hike. There's these awesome mountains around here, and there's like the Ho rainforest. And they're like, whoa, you want to go on a hump? I was like, I'm sorry. Yeah. I think you confused me with the Marine Corps. Like, we're going to go on a nature stroll. We're going to stop. We're going to walk slowly with light packs that maybe have booze in them. We're going to smoke cigarettes. We're going to hang out, take pictures of the beautiful valleys. And we're not going to do a forced march. I was like, we're going to eat chow and hang out. Like, well, okay, that didn't sound terrible. So we'd get out of the barracks and do that. And I was fortunate. My cousin lived over in Seattle. So we took the ferry across like every weekend and hung out with my older cousin. So
have somewhere to stay.
Yeah. So that was the first part. It was, you know, look, security forces, it's important stuff. Not a tremendous amount of fun, but at some point in the middle of my enlistment, it was time to go to what we call the fleet Marine Corps, which is like big Marine Corps.
Sure.
And I got to a unit, 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines there in Pendleton, California in, you know, the fall of 04. And so after being in security forces, like this is, again, the 01 to 04 time frame. So there's a big mix it up going on over in the sandbox if you weren't paying attention.
Yeah, a couple things
and,
happening.
Just a couple.
And here's Johannesson riding the pine bench in Washington in the rain. Not very pleased. I was stoked to get to the fleet.
Yeah.
And so I get orders to 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines. 2-4 is just coming back from a gnarly, gnarly deployment in Ramadi where they had a lot of casualties.
We were actually at the reunion for 2-4.
Were you?
Last year.
Oh, wow.
For Ramadi, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was very interesting to you know, be a part of that.
And probably the April 6th reunion.
And we did First Hardin Hail with them.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
And ran up and down, and it was a great experience.
Couldn't let the Marines win.
So anyway, I'm sorry to... What's that?
We couldn't let the Marines win.
Absolutely not.
Not at all.
So, so you're...
In typical Marine Corps fashion, I didn't really get what I expected.
Sure.
Right? Not as advertised. Mm-hmm. So I dropped to 2-4 and I check in my alphas, which is the green uniform. Mm-hmm. You know, you check in officially. Literally the day before the battalion lands from Ramadi.
Oh, wow.
So I'm checking in as a new corporal, right? Not been to combat. Yeah. I've got like PFCs who've seen way more, you know, and like here I am checking in as a squad leader to these guys that are kind of like war torn. So the first month on deck, you know, of course, I went in 2001. I have the Woodland camis and they're all salty and like white. So I wore those as much as I could before they changed the digital camis.
Yeah.
But these guys came back from Iraq. I mean, just all beat up. And I swear I was in like 30 Purple Heart formations, right? And I'm just completely humbled. Like, this is just, you know, nothing I've ever experienced. And then the battalion goes on leave. So my enlistment is up in December of 2005.
Okay.
We're in September, October of 2004. So after leave, we go into like a pre-deployment rotation. So old guys get out, new guys come in. We start to do workups to deploy. And we find out we're going to the 31st MEU, the 31st Marine Expeditionary Unit in Japan. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like,
again?
I signed up to be a gunslinger, right? And a door kicker, and I've got zero of that.
Yeah.
And so they're like, well, hey, so we're supposed to rotate over to Okinawa in April, and we're going to come back in December. So your end of active service is December of 2005. So you may not deploy. I'm like, what? Yeah. Like, what does that mean? Like, well, you can stay here in the rear. I'm like in the rear with the gear. Like, that's not what I do.
Yeah.
And they're like, or you can extend your contract. I was like, stay in the Marine Corps longer. Like, that's what, really? Those are my options? And so I was like, okay, well, look, I'm going to go with my guys. So I'll give the Marine Corps an extra 30 or 60 days. And so I did. So we went to Okinawa. We did jungle warfare training. We went on a float. You know, I was on the USS Essex, a Gator freighter, as they call it, a troop ship.
Yeah.
Went to the Philippines, hung out in the jungle. Nice. All the while I'm thinking, jungle training, that's a great idea. Here we are training for the last generation's war.
Yeah.
When there's a sandbox war going on. All kidding aside, we always have a battalion that's jungle trained at any time, you know, even if the war is in the sandbox. So I did that. And we hung out in Okinawa for a while. And I may or may not have gotten in a little bit of liberty trouble, allegedly.
We got to hear it now.
We were in Camp Hansen, and myself and another squad leader, we took two team leaders off base. We're hanging out with some of the recon dudes at a little beach party over at Camp Courtney.
Okay.
And as it turns out, one of the team leaders was underage, under 21, and was drinking and disappeared. He'd like departed the pattern and don't know where he went. And we had Cinderella liberty, which means you got to be back on base at midnight. So we're like, we can't find this dude anywhere.
Oh, man.
We're like, oh, great. So we called the officer on duty, and we're like, hey, we're at Courtney. We've lost this guy. Like, they're like, get back now. We're like, we can't leave him here. Like you're on a Marine Corps base. You're fine. Like, leave that base and come to this base. And we're like, okay. So we came back, and we had to stand tall in the front of the first sergeant. And we're like, look, you know, I don't know where he went. Eventually it found out he had gone back to someone's barracks room and passed out like in their lounge chair for the night. And they brought him back. But turns out I was a corporal. I was an NCO, and he was a lance, and he was underage. And so it was kind of like, they just frowned upon that. So they're like, okay, well, the rest of the time in Okinawa, why don't you just stay on ship while everyone goes to Subic Bay in the Philippines and hangs out? I was like, all right, fair enough. So I wish I had a really cool story from that, but I don't.
You know, I think we hear a lot about these stories. I remember getting in trouble myself in my unit, and my first sergeant, he looks at me and he goes, hey, listen, I got to tell you something, Private Reed. He's like, if you don't have an Article 15 in your military career, you ain't doing it right. He's like, we all got one. It's all going to happen at some point. So, and it's always underage drinking. Yeah, that's what got me. Underage drinking. Yeah.
No, I was over.
And it was someone else. It's always someone else. Yeah. Dude, FC over.
I should have known better, right? I was a corporal. I was a squad leader. I was pretty salty because I'm like about to get out. And I was just about to be 28 years old, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know better. But at the same time, like, these are my guys, you know, the first team leader from each squad, my squad leader and I. Yeah, you know, we thought we'd go out, have a good time, come back, and
did you give him some shit for that, or?
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah.
You have to.
NJP, right?
It's mandatory.
Yeah. Non-judicial punishment.
May have been official or not, I'm not sure.
So is that what wrapped up your career then?
Yeah, that wrapped up the first go-around. It's funny because we came back to California, Pendleton from Okinawa. I had taken all my gear over to Okinawa, and I checked out in Okinawa. So like I came back with one sea bag and I had my checklist. I had everything. So I like checked all. So when I came back, I'm like transitioning out. Like I'm doing the checklist and they're like, okay, well, formation's at whatever zero time. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to be there. And sometimes they pound on my door, they pound on the hatch. Like, hey, Corporal, we got formation. I was like, you got formation. I was like, I'm getting the F out. Like, forget this. Like I come down in PT gear. Like, why aren't you in the uniform of the day? I was like, dude, what are you gonna do? Shave my head and send me overseas? Like I am out of here.
I've been asking for a deployment for years.
Yeah, and you guys didn't do it. I mean, I showed up. I did my part. You know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I got out in December of 01. I came back home and I went straight to junior college. Like I knew what I was doing, what I was going to do when I got out, and that's go back to Texas A&M to finish my degree.
Okay.
It's funny because we're in the head shed, the command post for 2-4, and it's the tail end. Like I'm getting out. I'm talking to the career jammer in the hallway. Yeah, the career planner. And he's like, what are you thinking? I was like, well, I mean, I've already thought, and I'm not willing to commit that much more to the Marine Corps. The only question at this point is, do I stay in like the reserves and do 1 weekend a month and drill? Hmm. Or do I like just get out? Yeah. And I heard Sergeant Major Ellis around the corner, rest in peace. Corporal Johannesson, cut the umbilical. just get out or stay in. I was like, Sergeant Major, respectfully, I was like, the Marine Corps needs me a whole hell of a lot more than I need the Marine Corps at this point. He's like, oh, yeah. Okay, that's true. Like, you do whatever you want. So I get out. I went to junior college and I cranked out a bunch of A's because my job, I went back to, and I talked my way back into Texas A&M.
Okay.
And I was super excited about that. And round about April of 07, myself and a couple thousand of my closest friends got a FedEx letter the same time of the day, and my phone was blowing up. And this was around the time of the surge, and we were all in the second or third year of the IRR, the Individual Ready Reserve, which is like inactive reserve, right? Yeah. I had hair down to here. I had a goatee like this long. Yeah. I was a straight up college kid. I was 29 years old. I was going to class, and I was studying and making grades. And they're like, you got to come back. You're getting recalled. And I'm like, well, this is some BS.
Yeah.
You know? So I called around. I called like the local recruiter, Gunny, whatever. And he's like, hey, you know, if you affiliate with a local drilling reserve unit, now you're on their deployment cycle and they're probably not deploying before your obligation is up.
Sure.
And I thought about that and I'm like, man, you know, my first 4 years, I didn't even do like a real deployment. And I've got a lot of buddies who've done like two or three combat tours. They have wife and kids, real jobs. And I was like, you know, I didn't join the Marine Corps to like get out of my obligation. So I was like, all right, I'll go. So I basically, I called the division G3, which is the division level ops officer. Somehow I found a phone number in Camp Pendleton. And the captain, I was like, hey, Skipper, this is Sergeant Johannesson. He's like, yeah, what can I do for you, Sergeant? I was like, hey man, I just got recalled involuntarily. He's like, oh, that sucks. I was like, yeah, it does. I was like,
sounds about right.
Listen, man, I was like, I'd never been like the highest PT guy. I'd never done the most pull-ups. I'm not the fastest runner. My resume doesn't float to the top of the pile. I was like, but I am creative and I can sneak around and raid your village at 3 a.m. in the middle of the night. And I was like, so I want to be on a military transition team if I come back. I want to be an Iraqi army advisor. I want to do that. I don't want to be like handing out linens at Camp Ramadi or driving Motor T. Because, dude, I knew guys that had done, again, everyone who got recalled was a sergeant or a captain, 03 infantry, and had been honorably discharged and had been out for 2 or 3 years, which what that means is they didn't go back in 6 months later. Like they'd been successful in the civilian world and probably doing okay. Because a lot of dudes get out, and I don't blame them, and they go back in 6 months later because it's a nice warm cocoon.
Yep.
And sometimes it sucks, but I got four hots in a cot, three hots in a cot, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But all of us had been out. And so, I said, I want to be on MIT team. He's like, there's a problem with that, Sergeant. He's like, your deployment's like 7 months. Your recall time is 1 year. You've got to do annual training. So like sexual harassment, PFT, rifle qual, all the BS. Mm. Then you got to do a workup with your team. Then you deploy for 7 months and you come back and you check out. And I'm like, hey, Skipper, if I got to come back for a year and you're going to take me out of my cushy civilian life and make me cut my luxurious locks, then for 12 months, then I'll do it for 15. He's like, really? I was like, yeah, if I can choose my own destiny, right? Like, it's a no-brainer. So
I got the option.
So I did, and we got on deck, and I ended up on a MIT team, and we deployed, did all the workups and all that good stuff. There were half of our team, 15 guys, half our team were active duty dudes, and the other half were in my recall group. So I think we had four sergeants and like three or four captains in my recall group that we, you know, picked out of the crowd, and we all deployed together. And we landed in Ramadi in early 2008. Mm-hmm. And we were embedded with our Iraqis, you know, training and running operations and doing all the cool stuff at Snake Pit, whatever it's called now outside of Camp Ramadi. Because, you know, when you're on a MIT team, you're not living on a base. Like you're out with the Jindi, right, with the battalions. Yeah. So we're out in, you know, Snake Pit, Shark Base area. Mm-hmm. They renamed it many years ago to some American patriotic term, but whatever.
Liberty or freedom or something. Yeah.
Right along Michigan and the Euphrates and whatnot.
And what were you, what was your position? What were you specifically doing?
Just an infantry advisor. Okay. So, you know, the team composition was a major, you know, team leader, senior major, and then a bunch of captains, a couple of lieutenants, and then a handful of sergeants. You had a logo, you had an intel officer, you had a gunny type, you had a comm chief type, and then a bunch of infantry guys that were supposed to train the Iraqis. And so that was fun times training the guys to the booger pickers to do what they do. And so that, you know, a couple months in Ramadi, and we take a trip occasionally to Camp Ramadi, the big base, see big Marine Corps and eat chow and cool stuff like that. And then we get fragged. This is like 2000. This is April, I think, of 08. And like, hey, you got 72 hours to get down to Basra. So Ramadi to Basra. So all the way to the Gulf. There's stuff popping off down there. Battle of Basra. The Jaish al-Mahdi is coming across from Syria. They're going through the city. And so like, hey, we need you to go down there. So they fragged us, went down there and lived in tents and, you know, lived in the dirt and grew non-regulation mustaches the best degree that we could and shaved my head bald. Like my buddy Aaron over
here. You got to do it the first deployment.
Yeah.
How did that feel for you? Like, after all those years, your first initial enlistment, not being able to deploy and finally found yourself overseas.
Man, it's like a lot of guys who go and take trips. Like, some of them are crazy and some of them are boring and disappointing. And mine was probably like a little more boring, which is a good thing. Like, let's be clear. Like there, you know, we got shot at, and there were rocket attacks and constant threat of IEDs living out in Ramadi in, you know, early 2007. Now, thankfully, the crazy stuff in 04 Ramadi, like my 2-4 guys went through before I joined them, and the 06 Ramadi stuff, like, you know, Task Force Bruiser and like all those guys, that thankfully that had like been quelled quite a bit. So by 07, things were pretty calm. So I'm thankful for that. You know, there's a stupid part of any dude that wants to get some, but then you start to go over there and realize what getting some means. Like, you know what? This is like not a bad idea. So if I'm not getting shot at, I'm kind of okay with it. And if I can get home, that's also really, really cool.
Yeah. And, so, and we had a prior guest that was talking about blessings and disguises, you know,
for sure.
A lot of things that happened in his life didn't go according to his plan, but in hindsight really saved his life at the end of the day. So you never know with the what if game, right?
Yeah. And I never play that. I don't have any regrets. Like I've learned from whatever I've done, and I'm thankful. I feel like I checked like the combat deployment box. I got scared. Got shot at a few times and definitely had to take cover from rocket attacks and did convoys, and I was on the up gun. You know, typical deployment dumb stuff. I ran over an Iraqi taxi on an MRAP one time. My deployment was thankfully fairly uneventful.
It's good.
Yeah. Truly, boring, I feel very lucky.
Boring is beautiful.
Is yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm proud of what I did. It's funny because I told you I was back at Texas A&M. That was round two when I got recalled. And so my deployment is about to wrap up and we're going to rotate back in probably early September. Well, I start looking at the calendar. I'm like, well, we're doing like a relief in place with the new unit, which means we're going to start doing transition and handoff and we're going to ship out.
Yeah.
And like, that's going to be August. And I'm like, well, school starts August 25th.
I can go back.
So I wrote a naval letter, like a naval format letter. And I made the business case for letting me go back to the States like 3 weeks before my team. And I was like, hey guys, like if I go back, are you going to be like mad at me? Like, is that okay? They're like, dude, we're just doing a rip. We're doing like inventorying serialized gear and like making sure the other team knows what's going on. It's a lot of paperwork. It's a lot of downtime. Mm. And so I wrote a letter and sent it up to Washington and they let me go home early. So I went home 3 weeks early. So like I land in California, I do all my out processing and I get back to Texas like August 23rd, which is a Friday night. And like August 25th, which is a Sunday night, I'm driving down to College Station to start class.
Wow.
So it was like, super fast turnaround.
Rapid fire.
Yeah. Like I'm in August and I'm standing in this little outpost we have in Basra. And I'm on top of a Humvee with an Iridium satellite phone. And I'm talking to the university. I'm like, okay, like, these are the classes I got to get in for my final year. And she's like, yeah, you're breaking up. I was like, yeah, sorry. I'm on a satellite phone. I'm in Iraq. She's like, you're what now? I was like, yeah, I'm in Basra. I'm trying to register for class because I might come home early. So she's like, oh my God, bless your heart. You're a senior. We'll force you into all the classes.
That definitely helped you get a little, all your classes registered correctly, I guess.
Get a Southern Texas. Sorry.
If you hear that snapping, that's just enemy gunfire.
Yeah, don't worry about it. It's fine.
Hang on. We got to return fire.
I'm going to set the phone down, but don't hang up. Okay. Yeah. This is really expensive and I want to finish this conversation.
So, oftentimes I find that, you know, transitioning out of the military and having that dead space is what really crushes people on a mental note.
Yeah.
You obviously didn't have that. It's just diving right into college again. Do you think that flipping of gears so quickly helped you kind of mesh back into civilian world or?
Yeah. Ironically, I went from one high stress environment to another high stress environment like instantly. And the stress in school was self-induced, but it didn't make it easier. And I kind of had a chip on my shoulder because first of all, Texas A&M is a pretty patriotic Texas school. Like it's pretty conservative. And so like, you're not going to get a lot of the campus protests like my dad got coming back from Vietnam.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's not a thing where I went to school, thankfully, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I had kind of a chip on my shoulder. I was kind of like, hey, you know, I just came back from overseas, but I was also just, I wasn't right. And it's not because I was blown up. It was a different kind of stress. And I wasn't kind of normal until like December when the semester was over. But, you know, getting into the civilian world, the transition piece, I have a lot of experience and opinions on, which I think is what you're getting at, David. When I graduated school and I went to work, it was a lot better. And I was kind of like, I was by that time, I'm a civilian. Like I got a goatee again. My hair is a little bit longer and, I maybe gained a few pounds or what have you. But I think the transition is difficult for a couple of reasons. Like what was the transition training like for y'all when you got out? Do you remember what that was?
It was like 2 weeks of what do they call that class?
TAPS?
TAP or TAP. Yeah. Transition Assistance Program.
That's or something. Yeah, other. Yeah. Mine was 2 days.
Was it really?
And it was useless. It was a job fair.
Yeah.
It was 30 minutes of briefings, a couple PowerPoints about what the VA offers you. And then it was a couple booths from the local police station, the local Yellow Ribbon, the local VA was there. And there was a couple other businesses that showed up for like a job fair. And that was it.
Isn't it funny? From an incentive standpoint, it makes sense. But the military spends all this time and resources training us to do our jobs.
Yeah.
And then when you're done, they're like,
well, it's like, the disposable mentality, right?
Yeah.
They're hedging their bets too. I mean, if they don't tell you about all the programs and all the money they got to spend on you, they don't have to spend all that money on
now,
you.
And to be fair to the DOD, and just to be honest, like I got out the first time in 2005. Mm-hmm. So this is 2024 now. So it probably got better.
It is way better now.
I'm sure it is. And I'm thankful for that. And that's great because our guys and gals deserve that. But for me, it was a week of some class and I was infantry, right? So like, okay, you carry a gun. Cool. Cop?
Yeah, no trade
security
skills.
Guard. I'm like, actually, I'm kind of a computer geek or a nerd at heart and I like business. So I'm probably going to do something like that. So for me, fortunately, I kind of knew, A, that I was going to go back to Texas A&M and finish what I started. And B, I kind of wanted to be in business and technology because that's what I like. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of ignored the TAP and TAMP classes and I checked the box to get out because I needed the piece of paper to get out, but I already knew where I was going.
Yeah.
But not everyone has that.
Right? Well, for the most part, it felt like, the Forrest Gump movie where the guy comes in, he's playing ping pong and he gives him a letter and he's like, I'm out. And he just runs off.
That's it.
It really is. But it definitely in our conversations with guests, it has gotten tremendously better, but it's still kind of a point of contention. Mm-hmm. It still needs a lot of addressing. But we do. We spend all of this money on training you up. And like we did a disservice to a lot, 20 years of not providing the right mental health resources. We didn't even have a good grip on TBI until the last couple of years.
Yeah, until recently.
No kidding.
Yeah, last decade or so.
Well, so I think that navigating the dynamic of getting out, there's a couple of things involved here. This is what I get kind of excited about. When I started working in the corporate world, I would talk to other guys and gals getting out. I'm like, hey, introduce me to so-and-so. Let me look at their resume. It turns out I'm super opinionated on how resumes look and I can help with that. But then it kind of got a little deeper in the transition. It wasn't about finding a job and it wasn't necessarily about, getting my resume looking right. What I realized was that people getting out were missing a sense of purpose.
Yep.
And purpose is a really big word. Like that's super important. And when you're in the military and you're serving with the guys and gals to your right and left, you have that. You have a shared mission. Mm. You're working together. It sucks. And because it sucks together, like your shared misery builds this cohesion, right? Mm-hmm. It's psychological, as I've learned. And you don't know it at the time. You don't realize it until you get out and be like, you don't have that anymore.
Yep.
Like
it's missing.
If I wake up in the morning, what do I need to do? Why do I need to wake up today? Like, what do I need to do?
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, why? I mean, am I going to go punch a clock? Mm-hmm. Like, is that going to provide purpose? Did I even realize that I was missing purpose that I had? Maybe I can't even articulate what I'm going through because I didn't know that was a thing.
That's the biggest issue, especially, you know, with those who are banged up and seeing combat as purpose. And, you know, I oftentimes like to ask the question is, you know, when you're a part of something much bigger than yourself and you are willing to sacrifice yourself for that cause, how do you find a purpose that can equivalent to that?
That is the golden question. And I think I have a few answers or a few thoughts on that. And I can kind of share my experience.
Please. Absolutely.
I brought this book called Tribe by Sebastian Junger that my good buddy, Matt Nalen gave me. Fortunately for me, when he gave this to me, I had already realized this, but this book does a really amazing job of articulating that sense of purpose and why it's impactful. And a couple of tangible examples that he brings up early in the book were like the bombing of London during the World War II and how people like it brought them together in the tubes and the underground and to keep calm and carry on. One thing that really hit me was apparently September 12th, 2001, in the city of New York, crime dropped 40% in one day.
Wow.
40%. Because Americans had a shared enemy and more of a sense of purpose and cohesion. So I realized that there's this dynamic. And for my wife and I and for our family, we tend to be, we're pretty type A, like pretty driven, especially my wife, like she's pretty hardcore.
Drives a tight ship.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I love that. We're not like sideline sitters. We're not going to sit back and complain. Like we're going to get involved and do things, right? So with that backdrop and kind of mindset, we also tend to believe that like, you know, you model for your kids, like the right behavior. And we tend to believe in our family that it's not enough to go to work, collect a paycheck and pay your income taxes. You got to do that, obviously, whether you agree with the taxation or not. Like the point is like part of being in a society is you do your part.
Yes.
That's the required part. And also, we believe on top of that, it's not enough to just do your required part. You should do another part, which is looks a lot like service.
Mm, so service.
For us, serving in the community. And so let me go back to what I tell transitioning guys and gals. Like they tell you, theoretically, like I think I'm supposed to network when I get out. Network.
What does that mean?
What does that mean? Well, what it might look like is I go to a networking group where there's realtors and insurance guys and gals and bankers saying, hey, here's my card, buy my wares. Here's my card, buy my wares.
Yep.
That could be that. Those never set well with me. I realized later it's because those are more transactional taking relationships and I don't put a lot of value in those in general.
It's a good point.
What I found is that the relationships we have luckily stumbled into, the solid bonds we have with a lot of good friends, like our I don't want to say, you know, my buddy Aaron, like if you quote me on this, I'll tell you it's not true. A good friend of mine, great guy, Aaron Withrow. But we've met a lot of really great folks through serving our community. And we accidentally form these bonds with folks because we're working for something, whether it's Kids Removed from Homes, Lone Star, CASA, whether it's the American Legion here locally, whether it's the Texas Valor Project. But you're serving for that purpose. The purpose is not to network, to get transactional business. The purpose is to serve that greater good. Mm-hmm. And by doing so, you work side by side with guys and gals who are also serving the greater good.
Yep.
So what you get to witness accidentally is character in motion.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to see other people who have the same mindset, which is a selfless serving mindset. And so you accidentally network with amazing and successful people, and you become great friends with amazing people because you're serving a higher purpose.
Should be a side effect, right?
Yeah. That's absolutely right. The networking is a side effect. And you're not, again, you're not, you're trying to serve. So I tell folks who are getting out, I was like, start serving. I was like, service, you know, the old thing is time, talent, or treasure. Volunteerism, time, talent, treasure. You're getting out, you don't have any treasure. And you, if you're like me and you're a grunt, you don't have any talent.
Yeah.
But you do have a little bit of time.
Yeah.
So start serving. Well, where do I start serving, Trace? I don't know, your church.
Where are you interested?
Your community. Yeah. Like the local soup kitchen. I don't care. Pick one. If that doesn't fit you, like move on to the next Patriot pause right here.
Yeah.
Pick one and you'll find other people who are doing the same kind of service and you'll accidentally network your way into other service-minded people that are serving selflessly. And it turns out they're awesome people and a lot of them are successful. And next thing you know, like you're, hey, you know what? You know, I trust that Trace guy. Let's let's start a business together because I've seen how it works.
And it is. It's constant repetition too. Anyone in the business world could tell you that it's over time you develop these relationships. Mm-hmm. It's not going to a networking event and then all of a sudden opening up a business together. Yeah, no, for sure. Happens.
Hey, Dave, if we go to 4 coffees and 2 lunches, we're buddies now. Like it's not.
No,
it's
not that's a very great point. Is that's very transactional type relationship. And what we need to look at is selfless service while pretending that no one else is watching, right?
That's right.
If you're doing the right thing, and we talk about this all the time, is you know, passion versus monetary gain as well. Yeah. And that resonates deeply. If you have that sense of service and you're purpose driven, then, you know, the money will come, right? Mm-hmm. If you're chasing the right passion because you're all in.
That's right.
And that's the important part.
Even if it's not like a large amount of money, like you'll be rich in your relationships. Like you'll have amazing friendships with people you love and trust. Mm-hmm. Kind of like you used to have in the military.
It's exactly like
that. It's like, man, like these are people that I really trust and I know well and I can confide in. Just like the dudes I was in the Marine Corps with, right? Like I can call them up, like, you know, if a body needs to disappear allegedly, like I know who to call,
I know people who will grab them up, without asking questions.
The phone rings at 3 a.m. and I have to go, like we're going, like that's the kind of relationships you form. And that's what I tell everyone getting out of, like, you just start serving. I was like, I don't care where, it's just figure it out. Yeah. You start doing the thing. And the other piece of it is like, when you're in these, like, let's take a charity, for example. Like, there's a lot of folks who have money who want to give back, which is amazing. And it's super great.
I know exactly where you're going with this.
Right? But also, by being there and serving, and look, you have the black tie gala. And I have a lot of tuxedo jackets. Like, I like to dress up or whatever.
Yeah.
Also, throughout the year, there's a lot of work that goes into raising money and having the event and just doing the business of the stuff. So the other cool thing you get to watch, I mentioned character in action before, is you get to see who shows up to the boring business meetings, right? You get to see who shows up to the community center and like helps set up.
Yep.
And at the end helps stack chairs. And then you get to see who stands around in politics. You get to see who stands around and doesn't do work. You get to see who, they only show up when there's the open bar and the gala and the black tie affair. Yeah. Like you get to see who they are, right? So it's not just like, hey, I get to hang out with cool people. It's like, okay, you get to see people's character. And so like, you know what? That guy over there, like we're always stacking chairs together before and after the meeting. Like he puts in the hard work. I like his style. I like his work ethic. I want to spend more time with that person.
It's the stuff that's happening behind the scenes that they don't realize, right? I mean, that's what I look at as well as, we talk about reviewing resumes as an example. One of the great things I love about veterans is that it comes with a resume, right? For the most part, we all know the one or two that didn't quite hack it, but for the most part, you could tell a lot about their character, and that's what you're doing when you're putting up chairs or you're helping out the community. Is you're establishing a resume, a reputation
for
yourself that is, believe it or not, recognized by especially people that are looking.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. People who are looking like,
you.
I see you. Like, oh, this is my people. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I meet guys all the time. Like, oh, you're military? Like, oh, you're an officer, huh? I was like, no, dog. No. I was enlisted.
and that means like, that you—
trust me.
A great segment about—
no offense to the O's out there, the zeros. Like
some offense.
Yeah, some offense.
You deserve it.
Whatever is required.
That's a great point about, your... I lost my train of thought on that one. I'm sorry. You guys were continuing. So you interrupted me. Now, that's a great point too. Is now about purpose, but identity as well. Is a lot of times, especially in the wounded vets I see, is like where you're locking yourself up for 10 years and you're not engaging. Is you put so much emphasis on the identity of being a veteran.
Yeah.
That you can't step outside of that. Man. And what you're saying too is you projected yourself, you've moved on from that. You've used that as a resume item. It's a tool that is in your utility belt, but now you've moved on to that. And I, the same concept, I feel like I get that more often too. It's like, oh, were you an officer?
Yeah.
And it's because no, I'm not focused on that past anymore.
That's right.
I use that as a catalyst to what I'm doing today.
Sure. And it's, yeah, my thing is we're not living in the past. Like, I'm a former Marine. Apologies, Jack Mandeville. I'm a former Marine, and I'm very proud of it. Like, again, fourth generation. Like, this is in my family heritage, and I'm very, very proud of it. You know, I talked to he's 11 now, Cash, and he's in fifth grade. But when he was in kindergarten or first grade, they, like, on Veterans Day, they asked me to come talk to the elementary school. And I'm like, okay, how do I relate military service to some
children,
second graders or third graders?
Yeah.
And so I walked in, I was like, okay. I said, what are we in third grade? Like, yeah, I'm third grade. I was like, okay. Do you remember a few years ago, y'all were in kindergarten, right? Like, yeah. Like, you remember what that was like and what you did? Like, yeah. I was like, are you in kindergarten anymore? Like, no. I was like, right. Like, that was a thing you did. And now you're doing first grade, second grade, third grade. You're doing other things. Like, you're proud to be a kindergartner and you're also doing these other things. Like, it's part of who you are, but you're not a kindergartner your whole life. Like, I was like, man, I feel like I kind of nailed this whole relating to elementary school kids thing.
Yeah.
Probably because I was a Marine, you know, eating crayons. But the same thing for us. It's like, guys, like, look, there's a lot of us that serve. Like, you don't rest on your laurels. Like, it's fine. Like, be proud of it. But like, that's not the only thing. Like, that was a chapter and now I'm moving on. I've done other stuff. Like,
yeah.
I'm super proud of it. Let's be very clear. I still have a Marine Corps sticker on my truck. Like, okay. Yeah. Because it identifies me as part of a tribe. Also, I've done a lot of stuff since then, you know?
Yeah.
And so.
I think you're hitting on excellent points though. A lot of people, when they do get out, when they're transitioning, struggling with that purpose, or struggling to find something that they're interested in, is oftentimes what we see. And we usually tell them the same thing that you said. Go serve, go give back, get involved with a nonprofit. And that's always my suggestion to people. If they're transitioning out, they don't know what they want to do, go back to school. It buys you some time, you know, it gets you a paycheck.
Yep.
It buys you some time to figure out what you want to do. And at the same time, give back at a nonprofit. Go volunteer, go do something along those lines, because that will broaden your horizons. And there are so many nonprofits. In the U.S. today, there's 43,000 plus nonprofits that serve military and veterans.
Man.
There is every last thing that you could possibly want to do. I was a professional skydiver for years. I love skydiving and base jumping. There's multiple nonprofits directly focused on veterans and skydiving. It was great. They got involved, gave me an opportunity. I got to meet new communities, new challenges, and it broadened my horizons all the same way. And I got to have fun while doing it, right?
Yeah.
And that's typically what we tell people, is find something that you're interested in and how those cross over and coalesce, because there's so many of them out there. And it will provide that purpose. It will give that back to you. But I think a lot of people struggle with, and I'm sure you've seen this as well, is the responsibility, is taking the responsibility.
That's right. You're in charge.
You are in charge.
You aren't a victim here.
Yeah.
Like, you decide to get up every morning and do what you're going to do.
Yep.
And there's, to your point, 43,000 or something like that.
Plus.
So if you don't like or jibe with one, like, go to the next and the next until you find something
Let's be honest. There is a lot of shitty organizations out there.
Dude,
there's so many.
Yeah.
But there's so many good ones.
I don't want to get on a soapbox, but like...
Yeah.
A lot of us, you know, my buddy Aaron included, we don't, there's like, there's some, what I call peta vet, like, oh, you poor veteran.
Yep.
Oh, like,
absolutely.
That kind of stuff is a big turnoff. Like,
huge turnoff.
There are guys and gals who are suffering. There are, but like, let's not encourage like a victim mindset. Let's encourage like some kind of responsibility and show them to be successful.
We just had a conversation yesterday with General Goldfein about this exact same thing, is that we need to stop writing the narrative as wounded, ill, and injured veterans.
That's right.
And yeah. painting the picture of these people being the future leaders of America tomorrow.
Yes. Yeah.
And today it's happening now. I mean, we need the strength and to stop utilizing these injured personnel. That's what's hurting recruiting numbers.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know what I'm going to get.
Why would I join the military if I'm watching, you know, Sarah McLachlan's whatever her name is, dog, sad dog video with the wounded vet, you know, missing a leg. I'm like, oh, that's going to be me in four years.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah. No, thanks.
You can look at your future. Yeah.
So, as you're painting the picture, I want to see, you know, the Navy SEALs like storming the water, you know, getting out of the water, right? That's what it's all about.
Dave Bullitt, Charlie Sheen. Yeah, I get it.
Yes.
The original
Bradley Cooper.
So, can you talk a little bit about, you know, obviously we talked a lot about transitioning and kind of the work you've done. I want you to tie it into the work you do now as a mayor. How'd you get into it? And then what are some of the effective changes? Like, what is some of, you know, the passion projects you have given your platform to make a difference?
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk about how I got into this situation in the first place. You know, just like I mentioned before, like, you know, my wife and I are heavily involved in the community. I worked in consulting. Yeah, my job is kind of like a lot like Barney Stinson or Chandler Bing. No one really knows what I do. Like I solve problems for clients, right? I work in business strategy and technology consulting.
Sure.
So for several years, I traveled every single week. I was either Sunday night or Monday morning at like 5. I'm getting in a car and I'm flying somewhere, coming back. So I'm on the road all the time. But when I got back and I changed jobs and I stayed locally, that's when we started getting involved in things. I'm like, oh, a 6th grade choir concert on a Tuesday? Yeah, we can go to that. Oh, Chamber of Commerce? Yeah, we can do that. Like, oh, American Legion here in town? Yeah, we'll try that out. Oh, there's city boards and commissions? Like, we'll volunteer for that because, again,
get involved.
We're involved. Yeah. Again, we're not sideline sitters. We're like, if there's a problem or if there's something needs to be done, we'll be involved in it. But we're not going to sit back and complain like, well, the city sucks because, you know, X, Y, and Z, and I'm just not going to deal with it. Like, that's not our style. Like, anyone can complain. That's cheap and easy. Mm. So we did all these things. We got involved. I was on, city boards and commissions. I was on the architectural review board, and they called me. I signed up for everything. I checked all the boxes. I'm like, I'll do whatever. Like, I want to participate. I want to be involved, and I want to be complaining.
How old are you at the time?
Dude, I don't know. It was like 6-7 years ago, I think.
Okay.
Okay. 46 minus 7. I'm still 29 in my mind. Like, let's be clear. Like,
yeah, I'm still 12.
I don't
12.
Feel as old as I am. I'm 46, which is bullshit, but, you know, whatever.
So late 30s.
This is like 7 or 8 years ago.
Okay.
I came off the road and I was on the, they called me like, hey, do you want to be in the architectural review board for the city? And I was like, well, let me tell you up front, not an architect. He's like, good. We got plenty of those. What we don't have are like common sense people that I was like, okay, well, I got common sense-ish, you know, like, yeah, fine. So I'm doing that. And again, we're involved in several things in community and we're at a happy hour. Several local veterans and other folks are involved in. And two council members and the mayor like grabbing like, hey, why don't you get a fresh drink and come over here and talk to me for a second? I'm like, okay. So about 7 years ago, I stopped traveling and I got a phone call to serve in the architectural review board for the city. And I'm like, yeah, not an architect. They're like, good. We need someone with common sense. And I'm like, okay, I kind of have that. And so I was on the ARB and, you know, doing stuff for the city. And I got cornered at a happy hour by the mayor and two other council members are like, hey, why don't you get a fresh drink? Let's have a conversation. I'm like, okay, yeah, what's going on? I'm like, well, are you ready to step up for city council? I was like, what?
Nice.
No, dude, my wife and I are trying to have one more baby. We already have 3 kids at this time. And I'm on the ARB and the Chamber of Commerce and the Legion. Like, what else do y'all want from me? Like, you know, I also have a job. Like, you know, but if you go on city council, you can not do ARB anymore. And I was like, I don't think that's a one-for-one swap, okay?
One sounds busier.
They're like, no, we need you. I'm like, why? Like, well, there's an open seat and there's somebody running and we're not convinced that person has the right interest at heart. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, well, it seems like they're looking for a title or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we feel like your heart might be in the right place. And I'm like, I feel like you're appealing to my vanity right now. And it's 100% working.
Pulling the right strings.
Okay. Let me talk to my wife. I was like, you know, so she's like, look, we may have a baby. We may have another baby. We may not, but like they, if you say no, they'll stop asking you. Like we'll figure it out. Like we always figure everything else out. Like we'll just figure it out. It's life.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Right. Like, and so I went and talked to one of the council members, a good friend of mine, Kevin. And you know, he was the mayor that I replaced when he turned out. And he's like, look, you got to be honest with yourself. There's a little bit of vanity, you know, and I will admit I have a non-zero sum of vanity in myself, right? It's not zero.
Sure. That's what gets you places, yeah. Though. People need to understand that.
It doesn't have to be ego. It can be confidence.
Ego, ego is not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah. And he's like, but the other part is a service heart. Mm-hmm. And you have a servant's heart. And so just be honest about why you're thinking about running. Like, don't kid yourself about why you're running. Just be honest with yourself and think about it. So I did. And I ran and I beat my opponent 60-40. And, you know, that was my first term on city council. And, you know, for me, it was a lot of people don't understand what the heck city council does and why. And they're not supposed to, right? Our job is to deal with the minutiae of zoning and specific use permits and stuff like that so that y'all can go make dinner for your kids and go to soccer and be fine. Like, you know what? Johannesson has this mostly handled. Like, I don't have to worry, like all the crap. The city's going to run. My trash will get picked up. The sewer will go out. The streets will be in pretty good repair. And that's what we do as elected officials. So that was my first term. You know, fast forward. Here in the city of Rockwall, Texas, not Rockdale, Rockport, or Rock Springs, Texas, but Rockwall, the bigger one.
Lots of rocks.
Yeah, I know, right? We have term limits, which I'm in favor of. Mm. And so you term out after three terms. And for me, I was in my third term. And my friend Kevin was terming out as mayor. And so you can also do one victory lap as mayor. So before you term out, for real. So I did three terms on council. I'm in my third term. I ran for mayor and now I'm mayor. So I'll term out in May of 2025.
Okay.
And I'm okay with that. So, but a lot of what I do, like I'm kind of a figurehead. I'm an elected official. Like I'm honored to serve. Let's be clear. But in Rockwall, like in many cities, the mayor is like the chairman of the board of directors of a corporation, right? You come in and you have periodic meetings. You don't actually run the day-to-day of the business. You don't order stuff and sell stuff and get paid on stuff. You have a CEO that leads all the day-to-day and a COO, right? In city terms, we call that a city manager. And so that's what we have is a city manager. And she's like the CEO of the city and she's amazing. She's full-time. Like we are part-time volunteers. Mm. You know, I make a couple of $100 a month pre-tax. but look, my job is to represent the citizens, right? Mm-hmm. When I was running, I was like, if you go to the city of Rockwall website, there's an org chart. And at the top of the org chart are the citizens. And then there's mayor and council. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's city manager and staff. I was like, the citizens are in charge because in our little American experiment here, we're doing self-governance. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do. We have elected officials like myself and six others on council who deal with the day-to-day minutiae. We work for the citizens. And let's be clear, with 52,000 in Rockwall, you cannot make everyone happy.
Of course.
Yeah.
Right? So at some point or another, you're making some percentage of the population upset with every decision. And that's okay too, but at some point, someone has to make a decision. And that's kind of what we do, right? And then we go in parades and I wave, and which is awkward, I'm not honest with you. Like, before I was mayor, I would ride in the parade in the city, and the mayor and council are up front in the parade. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's 90 floats. And then there's American Legion and the Marine Corps League. And I'd ride back with the American Legion with my Legion cap on and said, you know, city council member. But now that I'm mayor, I have to go in the front, which is it's kind of weird for me. I mean, I know it's part of the deal, right?
Yeah.
But it's just, it's not super comfortable because when I term out, I'll be
hey, back you're the face the now.
Legion.
Yeah. You're I'm the face. Sometimes you got to make sacrifices.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So typically what happens is I ask people like, what do you want to ask your mayor? So I'll ask the two of you, like in your cities, if you wanted to ask the mayor something, I don't care how dumb the question is, ask me and I'll kind of, you know, for a couple of minutes, explain kind of how that
Why are potholes works. Round?
Yes.
Why are potholes
round? Same question. Why are potholes still in the road?
Sounds like a city engineer question. I'm going to defer you to your city engineer.
You have a mechanical engineering background here.
Yeah.
Oh, you said...
You almost did you, have one.
Forget the part where I said I spent more time drinking beer than going to class for engineering.
Then he became a professional
Because my dad didn't forget that.
I also know how you related to kindergartners. It's because you eat crayons all the time.
Crayon eating. That's exactly right. Yeah. Amen.
Bridges the gap, you
that's
know?
Right. Absolutely.
From kindergartner to mayor. That's the question, though. I'll ask. So there's a specific spot on 1604 in San Antonio North.
Yeah.
I've lived in Texas for almost 3 years. They've been working on the same one-mile stretch with 0% progress for 3 years.
Let me explain to you about our state government. Okay?
Where's it going?
So...
This is great.
This is what people want to know right now.
The people want to know.
And I ask this question a lot in our city because if you live in Texas and the road has a number, and I don't mean Second Street, I mean like FM 1604, or I mean 281 in San Antonio or 290 or here in Rockwall 205. That if it has a number, it's a TxDOT, Texas Department of Transportation road.
State control.
State controlled, state maintained. Okay. So our state government has a responsibility for maintaining that. We have a lot of those roads in our cities. Now, we as the city government can say, hey, state, do you know what we'd love to fix first in the order of priorities? Here's our order of operations.
Yeah.
And they say, yeah, we'll get to that when we get to that.
Yeah.
So 1604, I believe, is an FM road. FM 1604? Is that right?
It's Farnham Market? Outer Loop.
No, I know it's Outer Loop. It's outside of
I don't know if it's an FM.
410.
I don't think it's an FM, but...
Yeah. It's definitely a state road.
It's a state road, though?
Yeah. I'll bet you at least $4 is a state road.
It's a freeway. So.
Perfect.
So the
is
state
that before
decides,
or after tax?
It's after tax, buddy. Welcome to America. So the thing that I like to explain to folks, like, well, you can't have more development in Rockwall until we fix the roads. And I said... In principle, I agree with what you're saying. In practice, what happens is that's a state road. Mm-hmm. And we go to the state with our wish list. We're like, gee, we'd love to have this fixed first, this second, this third. Yeah. And they say, we'll get to it. The state does not do anything in anticipation of growth.
That's
they
it,
do it
right.
in
And we talked about that
reaction
today.
Yeah,
to that's growth.
The problem.
So when I get complaints, and I do often, about traffic, don't like it either. Also don't love crossing 30 on the weekend here in Rockwall.
But totally the construction that just finished was a 10-year ago
that
project,
That was a 10-year
right?
ago project. Yeah.
So that's the big thing
government work.
That we talk about too is in San Antonio. I've lived there for 13 years and there has been construction the entire time on 1604. And when they finish,
they
start again.
David, it's so cute. You think that they will be finished at some point. That is so precious.
You're right.
Have you ever
and
seen
three or four
I-35?
Of them are taking a smoke break every five.
Dude.
One works.
This is not a thing. When they finish, that's so awesome.
Finish.
Aw. You're so pretty.
I guess we have to say, we talk about this all the time with the federal side, right? It's the DEA, right?
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, they exist for a job that they should never finish or that they never will finish because... If the drugs disappear, then their jobs disappear. Will the drugs ever disappear?
That's an interesting irony and conundrum of a lot of the federal things that we have.
And that's a whole new episode.
And I would love if alcohol, tobacco, and firearms was just a fun activity in Texas and not an actual bureau.
I'd like to...
No offense to my ATF friends.
Who was John McAfee? He ran for president and his entire pitch was the ATF... will no longer be a federal agency. It'll be a store where you buy your alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. Like, vote for that guy. That's it.
Sounds like
that's it.
Christian, a toy store.
I think we have those all over Texas.
I think they added a C on the end of that. So it's like
cults.
It's cults as well. So
you
I don't
sign up.
You know, I don't want nothing to do with that.
That part you can leave off.
I already did that in the military. So,
dude, I was in the Marine Corps. Trust me, I know.
That's a cult.
Twice.
That's a cult.
And Texas A&M. So for those who are not in Texas, like it's kind of the same thing. Like,
fair enough.
You know, redheaded stepchild, a little too high in our own Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
I'm saying that looking in the mirror, but facts are facts. You know,
saying that looking at a redheaded stepchild. Brutal.
Boy, getting deep over here.
Well, you know, to kind of just bring it back to is my last question for you is, you know, being a veteran and part of that community, how do you think that that's amplified your life and your career?
I think it's an honor to be a veteran. It's an honor to serve the United States because we have an amazing experiment here, right? In self-governance and never been seen before. And it's amazingly prosperous. And I love living in America. I'm so thankful I was born in America. I won the life lottery, let's be clear. Mm-hmm. And so it's an honor to serve the U.S. And I perhaps naively believe that the folks who employ folks like us into action are doing things for the most altruistic of reasons. And so for me, you know, I'm honored to have served. I love the bonds that we formed with other guys and gals. And, you know, one time, the week that Amy and I were getting married, I got fired on a Monday before the Friday that we're getting married. Hmm. And the boss was like, you know, it's just not working out. And we're going to have to just like high five and, you know, we'll pay you whatever. And I'm real sorry. I feel bad. We talked about it on the weekend. I was like, yeah, John. I was like, man, it's kind of a bummer. He's like, well, what are you thinking? I was like, well, I mean, I'm sitting in my house in Texas in August and it's really hot outside. My AC is cranking. And I've got food in the fridge and everyone in the house is healthy and I'm not getting shot at. So I'm doing okay. He's like, wow, really? I was like, yeah, man. I was like, I'll be fine, you know?
Yeah.
And so like, you know, we move on. So I think that my level of what sucks is different than a lot of the folks in the corporate mm-hmm. world. But look, listen, everyone's worst day of their lives is the worst day of their lives.
It right? is. Yeah.
Let's be clear. We've had worse days than a lot of other folks, you know, comparatively, theoretically. And so I think that
but it gives you perspective. But it's a scale in their perspective.
That's right.
Yeah, I always talk about that too is when I talk about PTS, is a lot of individuals will come up and they say, you know, I've just done this or I never deployed or and I'm dealing mm-hmm. with this, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they discredit themselves and their story. Mm-hmm. PTS is PTS. It's the same biological response mm-hmm. in the human body, right? If you see your best friend get ran over yeah. while crossing the road mm-hmm. versus seeing your best friend die in combat, where's the difference?
Yeah.
So I think you're right. As you set a different baseline mm-hmm. for yourself, being in the veteran community, the more exposure you have to rough, crappy situations,
yeah.
the more that, you know, firing doesn't sound so bad, right? Because yeah. I'm not getting mortared today.
That's right. I'm not taking shelter under yeah. concrete because of rocket attacks here in yeah. Basra, you know? But at the same time, it's a lot like, you know, you just have a different perspective, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a good or a bad. And it's like, okay, well, we're going to deal with this. The other thing, I think, from a corporate standpoint, like, look, I, you know, I failed out of college. And I think you shouldn't go to college unless you kind of know what you're going to do. Now, if you're going to get paid on the GI Bill and kind of figure it out, that's a different dynamic. But, you know, having done that in the corporate world, I feel like I'm a pretty good utility player. A lot of military guys and gals are because they've mm-hmm. just figured out how to make it work.
Yep.
And because they've had to just deal with it. And that's kind of a good tool to have in your tool belt. I don't care if it's corporate or what your job is, but just being able to kind of figure stuff out
yeah.
when things aren't very clear.
Yeah.
Or like you have the commander's intent. Like, this is what we're going to do. Like, okay, cool. I got that. Yeah. And oh, by the way, like in my corporate job of consulting enterprise corporations, like sometimes I build pursuit plans and a part of it starts with OSMEAC. I'm not even kidding. Like it literally says situation, mission,
yeah.
execution, admin, logistics, command, and signal, because I don't want to forget stuff.
Five paragraphs.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, like, you know what? And they're like, oh, this is really well organized. I was like, yeah, I totally made this up. Psych. Like, yeah. I stole this.
It's one of the most valuable assets that the military teaches you is how to learn.
How to learn.
Right? And how to teach yourself, right? Because a lot of the reading that you do, a lot of the studying that you do, it's on your own time.
That's right.
You're going to learn this on your own time, and then I'm going to test you on it tomorrow,
and
there will be consequences.
There'll be consequences.
That's it. And that's what they give you. That's
Remind
what they gave me.
You how dumb you are.
Yeah, that's what they gave you. Yeah.
Or like I went to a water survival school, you know, my first... God. And like I lost 15 pounds in 3 weeks. And like there were 20 people in the class. And I was a pretty decent swimmer, not like a athlete swimmer, but pretty decent swimmer. And 12 of us graduated. I think I was number 11, but I didn't quit, you know, but I wasn't the best, but like I figured it out, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of
figure it out.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. So is there any kind of last minute things that you'd like to say to the audience? Maybe about when the local 205 is going to be corrected. What is it? The 205?
Wow, right under the bus. Thanks, Dave.
We sat at that light for half an hour. I was mad.
Oh, boy.
It's a state issue.
It's a state. Yeah. You should talk to TxDOT, Texas Department of Transportation.
We have Governor Abbott coming on next week. So
perfect.
We'll bring it up with him.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Talk to the big man.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, I would wrap, you know, like I talked a lot and I unfortunately do that, but.
No, it's not an unfortunate thing at all. As a matter of fact, I think it's suiting your character and it's gotten you to where you're at today.
Absolutely.
Boy, I hope there's more to it than me talking. But I would say it's like I tell everyone who's getting out. I was like, just start serving. Like that's just trust that like you're gonna do good things. It'll make you feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
Right. If you're not feeling well, just get up off the couch and go start serving. You'll meet other people. And next thing you know, you're like, you've got friends, you're doing things, you've got a purpose that you might miss. And then your life will be better. It'll be more enriched and you'll have great friendships and it'll be better. So, you know, just get out and serve. I don't care if it's church, community, or charity. Man, that was good with the alliteration. But like pick one, like in time, talent, or treasure. Like
that's it.
You got time. Get up and do it. So that's all I would say. And
brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thanks I appreciate
it. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. And I appreciate you and your service and your continued service to this community.
My honor. Yeah, truly. Truly.
Absolutely.
Very inspirational. Well, thanks for your time, Trace. Thanks for sharing with us today as well.
Thank y'all.
This has been the Medevac Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us today. Interact with the video somehow, if you're listening on audio, interact with it. Leave us a review on Spotify or Apple. It takes 2 seconds. Go do it. We'd do the same for you. We'll see you next
Please,
week.
Please, I would like to hear the comments about the local governance on this guy's episode here. It's just comment below on some of the most irritating situations you see in your city.
You comment below on your city and I'll make a little video about my city. I make a lot of videos that answer all the questions I get.
Yeah.
And the reason is because I get tired of being asked the same question all the time. And I'm like, I answer the question. Here's the video. Go watch it.
There it is.
Take his advice.
He's going to answer to your mayor for you.
Yeah. We'll see you next time.
Thanks.